Thank you, Julie. I don't know if I've done this before here at the Res. It's funny to stand up in front of a bunch of people who I usually think of as my friends and fellow pew dwellers and to stand in this place. I guess you guys do this all the time, but thanks for just giving me this opportunity. Thanks, Julie and Sean, for entrusting me with this. A couple of things I want to say at the outset Julie mentioned we've been involved here for a long time. We've got four kids. I think they're mostly here now this morning, and I've been involved in a whole bunch of different ways at the Res. And also in my day job, I'm a part of Sanctuary Ministries, which the Res graciously supports. And also at Sanctuary, we're very dependent on giving. And so it's out of that context as well, I'm very aware of the importance of sharing our time and money in God's work. And so I'll share from that. A really important thing I just kind of need to say at the outset, I want to acknowledge getting me up here to speak. I feel a little self-conscious on a topic like this. Like, you know, Julie and Sean picked the guy who's going to be, you know, if you could just be like, I'll be like Alan, wouldn't the world be a better place? And so let's just be real, right? That's not the case. So if in any way at all it sounds like I'm coming across as, you know, I've got this figured out and I'm doing this perfectly and I wish you were all like me, please understand that's not my heart or intention at all, and I just kind of want to muddle through this with you. So let's do that. I want to share just to begin a little bit of my own. Oh, you know, the last thing I wanted to make a comment about too is that I will probably throughout this talk mostly about giving money. It's just kind of what my default is going to be, but throughout this whole series, I think the emphasis is on both giving money and time in service. And so forgive me for the times that I don't mention both, but that is what I'm thinking about throughout. A little bit of my own story. I was raised in a very traditional evangelical church with very traditional family and lots of really traditional teaching. In fact, in the denomination that I was raised in, the Plymouth Brethren, we didn't have paid staff at our churches. So that means that everything was done by volunteers, the Sunday school teachers, youth leading, preaching, the treasurer, everything. Everything was a volunteer. And so that meant for me that growing up, that the idea that giving joyfully of one's time and energy for the greater good of the church, that was part of the fabric of what we did. And my parents also instilled in me pretty early the idea of putting money in the offering plate. I don't remember how they did that, but the idea of giving to the local church so that missionaries could be supported, so that ministries could carry on, that was all just part of what I grew up with. And I've been involved with camp ministries that have depended on donations. I've given to camp ministries to support their work, all that kind of stuff. So these ideas of giving and supporting local ministries has always been important. I want to tackle this question of giving for our context in three big parts. The first is what motivates my giving, myself and Colleen, what motivates our giving. Secondly is how do we determine how much to give? That's like the big question. I'm going to bring out my checkbook. I'm going to share it with you all. No, I'm not. Are you nuts? And thirdly, then how do we determine how we allocate that giving? Sort of what considerations do we keep in mind there? So first of all, what motivates our giving? My answer to this is a pretty simple one. Forgive me for maybe oversimplifying, but I'm a Christian. What that means to me, when I think of what it means to be a Christian, is it's not mostly about the beliefs that I hold to. That's a part of it. Mostly it's about a person that I follow. And it means that I'm someone who's passionately committed to walking in the ways of Jesus. And so as someone who is passionately committed to walking in the ways of Jesus, I open the scripture. I turn to the scriptures to see what does it mean to walk in his ways. And in the scriptures, I read about giving. We read this morning just now from Matthew chapter 6. And Jesus asks his followers there to use our riches for heavenly purposes rather than saving them for temporal pursuits, the kinds of things where moth and rust destroy. And he goes on to state what I think is fairly self-evident when he says that where my treasure is, there my heart will be also. Do you want to know what I love in my life? Do you want to know what I'm passionate about? Do you want to know where my heart is? Look at the things in which I invest, whether through my time, my energy, my money. Look at where my treasures get spent. So where my treasure is, there my heart will be. So if we're deeply committed to the ways of Jesus and we're committed to arranging our priorities in line with his, we can't serve two masters. We can't claim to be prioritizing the things that matter to Jesus when our use of time, energy, and money reflect otherwise. I can't pretend that this is easy or simple to figure out. It's not. But it is simply true. And so as people who claim the name of Christian as people who are committed to walking in his ways, we're left to wrestle with this imperative that how we spend our time and our money is profoundly shaped by our commitment to the ways of Jesus. So this is our motivation, my motivation for giving of my time and money to the things that matter to him. Next question is, how do Colleen and I determine how much to give? How much goes into our budget? This is a tricky one. No easy answers at the end of all this. I don't know how closely you're paying attention to the passage we read in 2 Corinthians. It reminds me of those kids in school. You remember when you were in high school and like the first, we all had to do presentations, and the first person who got up to do theirs was so good it was embarrassing, and you thought, oh no, I'm never going to be that good. Well, that's kind of how this thing was in these churches in Macedonia, right? Like it's terrible. So Paul says this about them. They gave very freely. This was from my translation. It's not the one we read from this morning. They gave very freely. They gave as much as they could. Even better. They gave even more than they could. And they begged us for the chance to share in serving God's people in that way. Right? The offering plate goes around once and people are like, hey, can we do that again? I love that stuff. And that's how they were. They begged us for the opportunity to share in serving God's people in that way. Paul goes on further in verse 8 of that passage to talk about the level of our giving. In this case, he's talking about the giving of the church, not as individuals, but I think we can probably guess that it applies too. But he talks about the level of our giving as a measure of our love for God. That's what he says. And he points to Christ's example. We want to talk about a high bar. Who was rich, but became poor for our sakes. And he points to that as the ultimate example. That's a high bar. So those are the considerations that we keep in mind as we reflect on how much we give. Notice that Paul doesn't refer to the Old Testament notion of the tithe. That was kind of give 10% and keep the rest for yourself. That's not the standard. The standard is about giving freely and generously based on what you can give, not on what you must give, as it was in the Old Testament. Do you remember the story of Jesus in Luke 21 and Mark 12, of the woman who gave her money in the temple? So Jesus and his disciples are watching. I don't know, it sounds like they're kind of sitting next to the offering plate, which is something we don't do now. But they're sort of sitting there watching as people bring their money and put it in. And a rich guy comes up with all his fancy clothes, and you know, you kind of just picture him dropping a wad of bills. I don't think they use bills, but he was dropping a wad of bills into the plate. And then a poor widow comes up and just drops two coins in. And it's the widow's example that Jesus commends. It strikes me that he was far more focused on how much each of them kept rather than how much they gave. The rich man kept a lot. The widow kept very little. And it's her example that he points to. So it strikes me that the way of Jesus is not about getting away with the bare minimum, but it's rather about giving without a maximum. So this is where it gets tricky. Does this mean that I can't buy groceries for my family or sign the kids up for swimming lessons or go to a movie? No. But it does remind me that it forces me to remind myself constantly that the money in my bank account, the money that I spend on a Starbucks, or invest in my kids' well-being, or I put in the offering plate here this morning, isn't mine to begin with. For God knows what reason, God has left it there in my bank account and asked me to look after it. He gives me the breath that I breathe, any smarts that I possess, any physical or emotional health that enables me to hold down a job. Even though I work hard to earn it, the very capacity to earn anything is a gracious gift from God, and I can never forget that. So I have no claim on a single dollar in my account. All is God's. I'm asked to be a good steward of it. And as a good steward of it, I'll make decisions about how it gets allocated. And as someone who is attempting to follow in the ways of Jesus, as we talked about earlier, I will seek to make those decisions in alignment with his priorities, whether that's the priority of caring for the needs of myself, my family, my friends, my church community, or the broader needs of society and the world. The biblical standard for giving, I think, is also stated pretty plainly by John the Baptist in Luke 3. He told his listeners, anyone who has two shirts should share with the one who has none, and anyone who has food should do the same. If you have extra, he says, you should be sharing with someone who has too little. And Paul says the same thing in this passage in 2 Corinthians in verse 13. He says, we want things to be equal. We take care of their needs out of our plenty. This is the way of Jesus. That's true materially. It's also, I think, true in terms of how we use our time. Let me reflect on that. I know that as a parent, especially, It's tempting to pour a virtually unlimited amount of time into keeping my kids and my family healthy and happy. But I also have to recognize that there are lots of people in our world who don't have that same capacity. And the words of Scripture need to challenge me in this area. The Jesus way, rather than asking us to compare ourselves to others to see if there are others who are giving less than us, instead asks us to compare ourselves to see if there are others who have less than us. And as long as there are others who have less than us, whether in terms of material wealth, personal health, relational wealth, we still have more that we can give. At the end of this section, I need to make a final comment. This could be totally construed to be guilt-inducing stuff, shame-inducing. That somehow I'm saying to you, no matter how much you're giving, it's not enough. I wasn't invited up here to do that, and that's not how I want to come across. So forgive me if that's how it is coming across. But I do think it's important that we reflect carefully on Scripture and let Scripture be a mirror on ourselves and how we give and how allocate our money. The third thing we wanted to talk about was, once I figured how much I'm going to allocate kind of in my overall budget to give, how do I decide where to give it? And how am I going to give it cheerfully back to God? So how do I know how much to give to the res, how much to give to Sanctuary? That's a lot. How much do you give to the Dale, for example, where Megan and Aaron Oxford work, or to Arosha, where Paul Abel worked, and so on? So here are the questions that factor in for me, and I don't think I can pretend that I have verses that are going to back these up, and I think that if we got different people up here each week, they might have different perspectives on this. So this is really just how Colleen and I have done this, and maybe it's helpful for you. Here are the five questions I think that we consider. First of all, does the ministry intentionally reflect the ways of Jesus? I'm not opposed to secular charities like the Humane Society or Michael Garron Hospital or Cancer Society. I'm not opposed to those. I'm just telling you, in my own giving, my preference is to give to organizations which intentionally point to Jesus through their work. Second question I ask is, how closely related am I to the relationship or to the ministry? I like to be close enough that I can have some confidence through using my dollars in ways that align with my values, which I think and I hope are in fact also those of Jesus. So I want to be closely connected to them. Thirdly, how much of an impact will my gift have? How much does this organization need my gift? This is an awkward one for me to raise here because of my work at Sanctuary, and especially because Aaron and Megan are here from the Dale. So Sanctuary's budget is a lot bigger than the Dale's. And so a $1,000 gift to the Dale has a lot more significance in the grand scheme of things than it does to Sanctuary. Don't get me wrong. We appreciate all those gifts to Sanctuary. I'm just being realistic to say that it's a bigger piece of the pie. And that, for myself and my own giving, is often a consideration. I love to give to an organization that's going to treasure the gift that much more than a much larger organization. I should say, too, that this is also true. There are still folks who fundraise for their own salary, and I might have sort of some quibbles about that particular model of doing things, but the simple fact is that if someone is fundraising to feed their family, then those dollars have a really big impact. And so that's a consideration for us as well. The fourth question I have is, how many potential donors does the ministry have? This is probably related to the previous one. Michael Garron Hospital, for example, has a virtually unlimited number of potential donors in Toronto. Sanctuary doesn't, the Dale doesn't, and my missionary friend Rick, who works in Belgium, certainly doesn't. So I feel some more obligation to those who are more dependent on my participation with their ministry. This is also, I think, understandably part of my reason for prioritizing Christian charities in my giving. The potential donor base for a secular charity is huge, whereas Christian charities are a lot more limited. And the last question is, will someone receive an extra dose of encouragement knowing that I'm standing with them financially? I love giving money when I know that someone I care about on the other end is going to appreciate it, and know that not only am I supporting them financially, but I'm also supporting them emotionally and with my prayers. And I can tell you that in my work at Sanctuary, and I think for those of us who I also know receive support like that, I think we can all attest to how meaningful it is to see a friend's name on a list of supporters, knowing that you're standing with us in our work. So that's something for me. A sidebar, which I didn't write about, there is that passage that talks about don't let your right hand know what your left hand's doing, and so some people use that to disagree with what I just said. I think that's kind of missing the point of that. I think that Jesus was talking far more about making a big noise. It would be if I had my financials up here, that would be the sort of thing that would not be a good thing. But letting Leif know that I support him financially in my prayers, I think, is actually a really valuable thing. So I wrote all of those questions for myself before I thought, hey, you know what I should do? Then I should see how those work when I apply them to the res. And they work well. So does the ministry reflect the way of Jesus? I think so. Am I closely related to the ministry? I think I am. How much of an impact will my gift have? It'll have a substantial impact here. More money in our coffers here means more ability to hire support for Julie and Sean, to expand our programming, to give more to missions. There's lots that it could do. How many potential donors does the res have? Not a whole lot. Hi. You're it. And there were eight at the first service this morning, too. So there are a few more. But this is kind of it, right? These are all the donors. So we really do need everybody to step up. And will someone be encouraged? Will someone receive an encouragement when they know that I'm supporting them financially? And the answer is absolutely yes. It's worth saying, and I don't even know if this has ever been said from the front before, but it's worth knowing that I don't know how much anybody gives. Julie and Sean don't know how much anybody gives. The wardens, the leadership team, none of us know. There is one person who does, and that's because they have to sign a tax receipt for you at the end of the year. So we're not going to receive a personal encouragement knowing Rachel and Tyler. I'm not going to receive a personal encouragement knowing exactly how much they gave. But we will know collectively that this community of faith supports the work that we're doing, and that will be a tremendous encouragement to us. So where does all this go? The bottom line is that, and you knew this was coming, the res needs you. Let's talk first in terms of time. We always seem to need more Sunday school teachers, nursery helpers, chancel guild people, hospitality team, soundboard, youth group, meal makers. Speaking of which, if you'd like to make a meal for youth group on Friday nights, we'd love to have you. Because I'm the guy up here, I can do my own pitch, right? Yes. Yeah, feed our youth on Friday nights. Call me. To the extent that you think that these ministries are, in their own ways, reflective of Jesus' priorities for us, they need your support. Please don't be shy. Well, there are many people here who unquestionably, I know, are doing lots already. The standard of comparison isn't what others are doing. It's what Jesus wants us to be doing. So we can't just be satisfied because we're doing more than someone else. And we need you financially, too. Some of us, maybe not all of us, but I think many of us have long wished for more in the areas of youth ministry or seniors ministry or kids ministry or outreach or a new furnace or something like that. But those things don't happen without increased giving. And so I'll invite you to consider that too. So, and in this regard, just before I close, a true confession. As I was kind of preparing for this sermon, this reflection, I'm on the pre-authorized giving thing. A bit of a shout out to that. If you're interested in the pre-authorized giving, it's a great way to give. One of the great advantages of the pre-authorized giving is that you don't have to remember week after week or month after month to give. One of the downsides is that you can go 9 years, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, without ever increasing the amount that you give. Because it's just kind of happening all the time, right? And you know, I'm giving something. It must be enough. And all of a sudden, I just went back and I looked through the history and I'm like, oh, wow, that's a long time to go without increasing that. And so I'm going to rectify that. And I will give you a lesson this morning in how to rectify that. Richard Daniel is the guy. Hey, Richard, you can wave. He's the guy that I'm going to talk to after the service today. And I'm expecting a long line. No, that's not really true. No, but Richard's the guy that you talk to if you want to increase your giving. And so I'm going to do that. So do you know that if those of us, so if you're like me, and maybe you've forgotten about this, if all of us who are on the pre-authorized giving increased our giving by 10%, which is not, like after 9 years, I should at least do 10%, then that would represent $12,000 to our budget, which would be the first time in the last 3 years that our donations have actually gone up. So that would be great. So I'll invite you to consider that with me. Julie suggested that I leave some time at the end for questions about what I've talked about, not about bigger theological issues. just in case, I don't know, I've said something, and this is the part of the show that makes me really nervous. But at least I'm off script, which is why I'm nervous. Any questions about anything that I've said? Rachel, yeah.
Just wanted to correct one little thing.
Oh, great.
It's true that in the Old Testament you're supposed to give 10% and you're giving your first fruits, but it's not out of compulsion. It's also supposed to be out of a sense of thankfulness and gratefulness. And so I didn't think that's what you were saying, but I just wanted to make sure everybody knew.
That's what you get for talking out of your league. Okay. Anyone else? Yeah, Casey.
So I know we're talking about the idea of there being, you know, giving the finances
What kinds of, are you thinking of things like clothing, food? Is that what you mean by other? Or skills? Yes. Right. Time, yeah. Yes, absolutely. So I'm not sure if everyone can hear that, but Casey was referencing the fact that it's not just time and money, but we also all have specific skills. And so it's also, I mean, of course, giving those skills will require time. But those skills are particular things that the church needs. And so please, if you've got skills that you can share with the church, please bring them to us. That would be great.